Matt Williamson and Ryan McDowell.
Welcome into another edition of the Dynasty Blueprint. I'm your host, Ryan McDowell, joined as always by Matt Williamson. Matt, it's playoff time. You ready?
Yeah, I'm really excited for the NFC games. I mean, I think the AFCs are going to be stinkers, and I know Bills Nation is thrilled to be in, but I think we'd have been a lot better off if we'd have seen the Ravens or especially the Chargers, just for competitiveness reasons.
Yeah, I don't know. Who wants to see the Ravens?
Yeah, the Ravens aren't much.
Yeah, the Chargers. Yeah, the Chargers might have been a little more competitive. I agree. I was looking at and trying to just make some picks on my own, just for fun. And the AFC games just seemed, pretty boring. The NFC though. Yeah. Who are you liking there? Let's go ahead and make some picks.
Yeah, and I'm going to do that on my Locked On show tomorrow. Oh. I'll be talking about him in depth, but no, I don't care. I mean, it's not a big secret or anything. I think the Falcons are in trouble because there's a couple things I think that really favor the Rams. You know, one example is the Falcons' offensive line is good, but they're really weak at both guard spots. Well, Aaron Donald lines up on the outside shoulder of a guard. You know, like, there's a couple things I think that really favor the Rams. You know, that the Falcons' defense isn't the real scheme-you-up kind of D, and teams that are scheme-heavy like the Rams on offense can have success picking apart predictable coverages. So I like the Rams in that one, and I like the Saints in the other one, too, just because – I think they're just a better team at home, run the ball. Those running backs are studs.
Yeah, I think the Saints might be my Super Bowl pick out of the NFC. With the Rams and Falcons, it seems crazy to say this after what we saw last year, but I'm not sure the Falcons can score with the Rams. I'm not sure they can keep pace.
Right. So I agree with you.
We'll see. It will be certainly some fun watching that playoff football. And I don't know, just I experienced this last week in week 17. It's just a different feeling to watch football when you don't have fantasy games going on. I know people are still playing daily fantasy and playoff leagues and things like that, and that's fine. But for me, it's just a little bit of a different feeling, more relaxing, certainly.
And I would think for our reasons, it's time to start really thinking about the rookie class coming up here.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a lot of those players declaring. So the class is kind of coming together, getting some clarity on that. And we will definitely be talking a lot about those incoming rookies, Saquon Barkley, and we've got the quarterbacks jumping in, both Rosen and Darnold this week. And we've got a few players left to really round out that class, like I said, and we'll be covering that just as much as we can over these next few weeks and months.
Senior Bowl's only 2 weeks away, bro.
Wow. Yeah.
It's amazing. But yeah, 2 weeks away at the Senior Bowl.
Today, we're going to go in a little bit of a different direction, taking a little bit of a look back on this season. And we've got Addison Hayes from Roto Baller joining us. Addison, how are you doing?
I'm great, guys. How are you doing?
Doing well, doing well. Glad to have you. And Addison, I've been following your work this season. And what has really caught my eye is these consistency reports that you've done for Roto Baller. And I've seen other people do work kind of along these same lines, looking at which players are the most consistent when it comes to fantasy football. But I like what you've done in that you've done weekly updates. A lot of times I've seen that done as an off-season article. I've even done it myself as an off-season article, taking a look back at the season as a whole. But I love that you did it as weekly updates there for Roto Baller.
Yeah. It was kind of a spur of the moment type thing where Pierre, he's the lead editor there for the football writing, and he thought that it was just a great idea for a weekly article, and I wasn't sure if I would be able to keep it, you know, updated every single week, and what was I going to talk about. The numbers weren't really going to change all that much, especially for certain types of players. Overall, the reception that I've gotten back, you know, throughout the whole entire season, just blew me away with everybody loving the weekly updates and the weekly articles about it.
Yeah, well, I definitely enjoyed it.
Do things change a lot week to week?
It kind of depends for certain players, you know, like especially for like the PPR guys, like, you know, the Golden Tate, Jarvis Landry's, their numbers are usually pretty consistent. Mm-hmm. I remember when Amari Cooper's, you know, his 44-point splash explosion game changed from being like very consistently terrible to being like his average like spiked and his standard deviation jumped I think upwards of like 13 or 14 for his standard deviation. So that was a pretty big increase. And Stephon Diggs kind of did the same over the course of the season as well. So it kind of varies based on the player.
Makes sense.
So Addison, like I said, I've seen some others do some work along these same lines, and it seems like everybody kind of takes a different approach. So just talk a little bit about your overall process for collecting and determining the consistency data.
Right, right. So collecting isn't really that hard. It's most of my stuff I just did was a copy and paste of the weekly stats and everything like that, and just getting the fantasy numbers. After that, it's just a bunch of Excel work. Excel is my best friend, so that's really how I did it. And then just made, you know, charts, graphs, did all that sort of thing. So the process of collecting and updating it weekly isn't too hard. It's just the interpretation on a week to week basis that doesn't change that much for certain players.
Are you proud of yourself that you're able to overcome your Penn State background to get that done? that limitation, that handicap, that you're able to overcome that and still work these numbers. Are you proud of yourself for that?
I think that actually helps, you know, the Penn State education, they're preparing me.
we had a little off-air battle between this Penn State guest and our Homer Pitt fan, Williamson. So sorry to bring that out, but we'll get back to it a little bit. So Addison, how are you determining a player's consistency? Are you looking at their finish? If they were a wide receiver one, if they were a wide receiver two, are you strictly looking at fantasy points? How are you doing that?
My method, which I think is somewhat, you know, new and innovative, is just looking strictly at the points. What I wanted to do, I saw a lot of people saying, well, you know, this guy finished as a wide receiver one, you know, in 10 out of the 16 weeks, but this guy finished as a wide receiver one and two in 15 out of his 16 weeks. So he's really consistent. I wanted to get rid of, you know, the weekly aspect of it and just say, how is this person scoring, you know, on a week to week basis, just points wise. And so I just use average and standard deviation, which just basically tells you how spread apart the data is. And I use the standard deviation as a new method of determining consistency and inconsistency from there.
Well, two quick questions for you. Did you use week 17 this year or not?
Yes, I did. Yeah. And but it didn't really change numbers all too much. I mean, some of the players didn't really play, so that doesn't affect their data set at all. You know, like Todd Gurley. The other players who did play, you know, like a half, that does somewhat affect their overall finishes. But I did use week 17 because there are those leagues out there that still play in week 17, unfortunately. It wouldn't be hard to switch back to week 16. But yeah, I did use week 17.
I think it'll be interesting too. Like, if guys are traditionally slow starters or quick starters, I mean, once you get 8 years of data or whatever and be like, boy, he kills it in September, October, but then falls apart, or, you know, you really see some trends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I have yet to explore. I have data all the way back to 2010. So I've yet to really explore how players are doing. Like you said, at the start, or at the end of the season. So that's going to be like the focal point of my consistency work over the summer.
Addison, in your charts and in your data, you talk about a stat that you've listed. I guess it's CORE, C-O-R. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so CORE, CORE was my own stat that I developed. It kind of is a way to give a power ranking of sort to the consistency charts. What I intended for it to do was to not penalize players for really, really good games. And so CORE basically just takes the player's weekly ceiling, which is their average and their plus their standard deviation, and divide that by something called the coefficient of variation, which is another statistical number, which is used a lot in like the financial industry. That's standard deviation divided by the average. So I took the ceiling divided by the CV, and it gives you a number usually from like 1 to 100, maybe a little bit more. And that gives you like a power ranking of sorts. So it gives weight to both consistency on a standard deviation basis, but also it gives weight to players who are, you know, capable of those really explosive games like Todd Gurley this year, or, you know, the typical Julio Jones. And it doesn't penalize them for being inconsistent because they had a 40-point game that was, you know, really, really far away from their average. So it's just a different way to rank these players consistent-wise.
How did that affect a guy like Cooper, who you mentioned him earlier with that huge game he had in week, I think it was week three, maybe. It was pretty early in the season, but he had this 44-point game and then basically didn't even come close to that the remainder of the season. How did that affect his numbers?
It gave a weight to the fact that he was able to produce that 44-point game because he, like I said, he was doing very like consistently terrible. So he was consistent on a standard deviation basis. And then because of the 44-point game, he became very inconsistent, which may be more truthful. But what the core did was it took what his ceiling would be because his average was raised and gave him a more accurate number for the type of production and performance that you can expect from Cooper down the road because of that 44-point game. And he's not just that, you know, that 1 to 5 point fantasy point score. Like, he can definitely do that, although it might be unpredictable on a week-to-week basis on when he's going to do it.
Does anybody else come to mind who is similar like that, that was on every fantasy team and started a lot, that consistently didn't put up big numbers and then boom, had a huge one? No one else comes to mind this year.
The person that comes to mind did the reverse. That was Stephon Diggs. You know, when he started out first 3 weeks, he was the wide receiver one and then dropped off mostly due to injury. He's the only other one I can think of who kind of did it in reverse. Sammy Watkins did it a little bit when he had that really big explosive that Thursday night game. Cooper was really like the only one. Julio Jones also, his numbers really flipped whenever he had that 50-point game, when he had the 250 yards and whatever. His consistency numbers jumped from, like, he had a standard deviation of 5 and he finished with upwards of 9 or 10. And his average jumped from 13 to 16, I believe, just because of that game. So his core was kind of affected as well.
So Addison, we want to go position by position here a little bit, just talking about some of your findings and what we really want to hear from you or some players that you'll be buying or selling based on the data that you've collected this year. So we'll start at the quarterback position. Who are some of the, not only the top quarterbacks, but I guess most importantly, the most consistent quarterbacks according to your data this year?
Right. So most consistent, just on a standard deviation basis, the most consistent one was actually Drew Brees. Even though a lot of the fantasy owners who had Brees probably would say that, you know, he didn't have the Brees type year that we would all expect with all these, you know, top three finishes and a top three overall finish. But on a weekly basis, Brees was really consistent. He had a 3.47 standard deviation, but that was only around a 16-point average. So that really hurt his floor and his ceiling overall. That is the most consistent. Similar to that is also Matt Ryan, who had a 3.7 standard deviation, but his standard deviation was around a 14-point average. So like Brees, his ceiling was, you know, drastically reduced, but he was very consistent, never really killed you, but never really helped you win a game. Mariota is somewhat like that as well, with a 4-point average around a 14 or a 4-point standard deviation around a 14-point average. So those are like the three most consistent. But then you have another guy like Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz's standard deviation was around 5, but his average was 21. So his ceiling was just elevated. He was consistently putting up the big numbers on a weekly basis up until his injury. And he was probably, you know, like headed for an MVP season before that injury.
Yeah. So standard deviation is an important piece of your data, but it certainly doesn't tell the whole story here. To say that Mariota and Matt Ryan were consistent is true, but they were consistently really disappointing season. Yeah.
Right. So
that's a piece out. So that makes it even more important that you bring in that floor and the ceiling piece and the core that we talked about. That just shows how important that data is as well. One guy that stood out to me was Dak Prescott. So he finished the season as quarterback 11, obviously in that quarterback one range overall. But in your season wrap-up article, you listed him in that dud category. Talk to us about why that was.
Yeah, so Dak really came out, and he had that explosive first half of the season. And he was very, very consistent, and he was rivaling Drew Brees with in terms of just lowest standard deviation. But the difference between him and Brees was that Prescott was doing it at an elite level. And then, you know, all of a sudden he just really hit a bump in the road. I don't know if it was due to Zeke's suspension or what happened, but after week 10, Prescott was really almost unusable for fantasy teams. And so it really bumped up his standard deviation, dropped his core significantly over the second half of the season. And that was the biggest reason why I put him in the dud category, was because, yeah, he got you 7-3 by the time you hit week 10. But after that, he was basically on waiver wires in redraft leagues and in dynasty leagues. You're not really starting him unless if you had no other option. Finishing as the QB 11 is more indicative of the start to the season that he had than the end of the season. And that's why I put him in the dud category consistency year round.
Addison, who are some quarterbacks that you would be buying this offseason in dynasty leagues based on your findings here?
So buying, I think personally the biggest one for me, Jared Goff, actually. He was, you know, pretty consistent year round. And he had those really explosive weeks thanks to Sean McVay and Todd Gurley. And I'm really excited for the future of Jared Goff in this offense. And I really think that his price right now has not met the production that he put up in 2017, especially on a weekly basis. He's sitting, you know, I believe in the top 12 in core. And I really think that Goff is being undervalued because of the rookie season that he put up at the end of 2016. And so he's for me a massive buy over this offseason. Another one is also Jimmy Garoppolo. Everybody might think that I'm just jumping on the bandwagon here, but if you look at the numbers for what Garoppolo was able to do, it's actually really amazing, especially considering the supporting cast around him. Once Garoppolo took over, he almost basically never scored less than 15 points. Really got himself into the starting role, learning Kyle Shanahan's offense, getting that rapport with Marquise Goodwin. And he is also, for the number of games that he played, also was very, very consistent with a 5.6 standard deviation. And he finished in the top half of core in for quarterbacks as well. So I'm really liking what Jimmy Garoppolo has to offer. He's young and in the Kyle Shanahan offense, and they have so much cap space to spend on, you know, more weapons for him. So Goff and Garoppolo, I think, are the two biggest quarterbacks that I'm buying this offseason.
I think the Garoppolo one's interesting because if you remember his first couple starts, the tape looked great. They were winning. He was moving the ball, but they didn't score a lot of touchdowns. So, I mean, just for fantasy reasons, we know how important touchdowns are, that if he was missing that early and still did this well, I think he's a big-time buy.
Well, that's similar to Deshaun Watson, right? I mean, we all remember Watson putting up these 35-point fantasy games and throwing touchdowns to Nuke Hopkins, but he took over in the second half of the first game and did not look good, looked terrible, understandably for a rookie thrown in that situation. But after a game and a half, two and a half games, it was not looking good. For him to finish pretty high in Addison's core ranking and for him to finish just with the numbers he did in limited action is impressive as well. So kind of similar spots there for those two guys.
Goff and Jimmy don't really fit this mold, but I would think running quarterbacks would be a little more consistent.
It kind of depends on the quarterback. Like if you look at Cam Newton's numbers, he's a little bit farther down the list just because of his explosive capability. You know, most of his fantasy production is through the running game. Just because of he's not, you know, that great of a passer. But when he does hit as a passer, that's when you really get those explosive weeks. But Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson are 3-4 in core. But after that, it's a lot of pocket passers until you really hit Cam Newton. And then Tyrod Taylor's kind of in the middle of the pack as well. Floor-wise, they definitely – their rushing production definitely elevates their floor, but doesn't necessarily make them more consistent, if that makes sense.
Does.
Cool. Yeah, I do like the golf call. Of course, Gurley has really ascended this season, and I would say is in the running to be the top overall pick in dynasty drafts this offseason, certainly in contention for the RB1 spot. He's gotten a lot of deserved attention. Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods, we've kind of seen with breakout seasons, they've gotten attention, and Goff has as well, but I think he's kind of gotten lost in the Carson Wentz and Deshaun Watson and even the Garoppolo hype late in the season. And maybe we should be using that to buy him. I think that's a good call, Addison. What about some players, some quarterbacks you would be selling?
The biggest one for me, I actually wrote an article on him. I believe back in October, but it was for Roto Baller. Is Drew Brees right now. I did mention that he was the most consistent quarterback from a standard deviation point, but it's what his average did over the course of the year, only a 16-point average. He did finish second in core, but that's mainly due to the fact of how consistent he was. He didn't really have that high of a ceiling, and I'm concerned not only just for the age factor, but also we've seen now what New Orleans really wants to do, assuming that Mark Ingram, you know, is there on the team next year, that all pro contract situation. But with Ingram and Kamara now, you know, Brees didn't really have to pass the ball. And I'm feeling like that's kind of what Sean Payton wants to go for to save Brees. We know he can do it. It's whether or not he, you know, he'll have the opportunity to do it. He did better at the second half of the year when Kamara and Ingram kind of slowed down a little bit. And Michael Thomas really took a big step forward. And was Michael Thomas we knew from 2016. But Brees right now is a giant sell for me in Dynasty for multiple reasons. And the other one, Smith, semi also for obvious reasons as well, and the fact that we don't really know on next year if he's going to be on the Chiefs or not. But just from the numbers standpoint, this was the best season for him consistency-wise across the board. He finished with the second highest core of his career. The other one was in 2015, but this was his highest point total, his highest average. He did have a little bit of a higher standard deviation, but his floor and ceiling were really elevated. And with that came a really high core. So I think this is kind of an outlier season of production for Alex Smith. I know a lot of people already believe that so, but the numbers support that. And I think that they really support the fact that Alex Smith should be a sell if people still believe that he can maintain this production if he's on the Chiefs next year or whatever team that he goes to for 2018.
Real quick thoughts on that is I don't think Smith will be a Chief next year. I wonder if Mahomes is a buy or sell in his, you know, in his stead. And then my question for you, Ryan, is say I'm sitting here with Brees and Goff, and this is my last chance to move Brees. What do you think I could get?
Yeah, that's the tough thing. I mean, I'm all aboard Addison's idea of selling high on these guys before it's too late. If you're in a super flex league, they're going to have a lot more value, of course, but in a one quarterback league, it's going to be tough to move Smith. Even a month ago when we were heading into the fantasy playoffs, it was still tough to really get much value out of him. So, I mean, honestly, you'd be lucky to get a second for Smith, I would think, especially with the unknown about where he's going to play. I agree with both of you guys that it's probably not going to be in Kansas City. So you take him out of that Andy Reid offense that he's played in for so long and take him away from Hunt and Hill and Kelsey. And there aren't many situations that are going to be better than that. Brees a little bit more value, I think, certainly, but you're still talking about a mid second rounder, I think. And that's probably the high end on what you could get for him.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Let's look at the running back position, Addison. 2017 has really become the year of the running back. We've had just an amazing rookie class. We've had some other breakout players, guys like Gurley bouncing back and really showing what they can do. Has all of that kind of come through in your consistency data as well?
Yeah, definitely. You know, when I was going through the data and filtering it and stuff, I'm looking at the overall rankings for core for non-quarterback positions, because quarterbacks, you know, they're going to score high, a high percentage of the time in core. So if you remove the quarterbacks and just look at who the non-quarterback players are that finishing at the top of core, Actually, 10 of the top 15 players in Cora are all running backs, and all of them were top 12 finishers, and they all finished above a 50 core, which is actually really, really high. It might not seem high, but it actually is. And the top of the list is Le'Veon and Todd Gurley are the number two, one and two players at the top of core. They're both sitting at 85 and 81 core. And then the other players, you know, the non-running backs, it's Hopkins, Landry, Antonio Brown, Michael Thomas, and Gronk are the only other five players in the conversation with all these other running backs. So the data definitely supports that this was a year of the running backs, and it's actually really amazing.
Okay, that's good to know. I was actually going to ask if that core number can be compared position to position. It sounds like it can.
For the most part, yeah. If you're getting into the tight end position, that's like a very, very low core. The average around there is usually going to sit around 30 or 40. Whereas for running backs and wide receivers, that might sit a little bit higher, upwards near the 50s. But definitely for running backs and wide receivers, the core value is very comparable. And then tight ends gets a little iffy in there too. But it definitely is, for sure.
You talked about this situation a little bit earlier with guys like Breeze and Matt Ryan. But at the running back position, Lamar Miller stands out to me. And I was one of those people, or I am, I guess, one of those people who track more of RB1 weeks, RB2 weeks, and so on. And so I know he had what maybe looked like a successful season with a lot of top 24 finishes, but most of those were in that 13 to 24 range, finishing as an RB2. But he shows up relatively high in on your core data. So how should we treat players like that, that they were consistent, but not at that high level that we like to see?
When you showed me this question, I was very, you know, like, I was like, how do I answer this question? Because I'm not really even sure myself. It's a tough one. But for me, I've always been a Lamar Miller fan. I've been an apologist. Everybody's like, oh, he's so replaceable. And I agree. I see all of it, too. But the fact that he is as consistent as he is, he's never really going to kill your team, but he's not going to help you really win weeks, you know. For me personally, I think you have to value him and other players like him as a little bit less than what they truly are. So by that, I mean, if Lamar Miller, you know, is a perennial, like low-end RB2, he needs to be treated as a high-end RB3. Just in trade value and everything like that. And you need to have that splash of production, you know, elsewhere in your roster to make up for a Lamar Miller type. So in the one league that I had him in, I also had Alvin Kamara, and that was a playoff team as well. So you can imagine that Alvin Kamara definitely helped, you know, boost up what Lamar Miller was lacking in explosiveness. But Miller gave you that floor on a weekly basis that really no other players can do for you, especially at the running back position. So I think personally he's a little bit undervalued because fantasy owners don't appreciate what he can do for you on a weekly basis because he's not flashy. He's not the new hot toy. But, you know, he comes in, he produces, he does his 16 carries for 40 yards and three receptions for another 30 yards, and he might get you a touchdown every now and then. But that's personally how I see it. I don't know how you guys view that.
No, that makes sense. And when I said he's relatively high, I had to double check. He comes in at 14th on your, according to your core data, which is probably around the spot where he finished. He played the full season. I don't think he missed any games. And you talked about his floor, which is exactly right. That's what he gives fantasy owners, a floor of, that low-end RB2, high-end RB3 range, which is easy to overlook and easy to kind of throw away sometimes, but it does certainly have some value.
I would think 16 games with Deshaun Watson would only help him too.
Right, right. Yeah, we talk about some of the other players. Fuller is a big one who we expect to improve both in consistency and just in overall fantasy scoring when Watson is back and healthy. And that could be the case with Miller too. If he doesn't get cut, there have been some rumors that he may be gone from that roster. So we'll see how that plays out. Let's talk about some running backs you would be buying based on this data.
So for me that I'm buying, I think now is an opportune time to buy Leonard Fournette. He kind of disappointed fantasy owners over the second half of the season with all that injury. Is he going to play? Is he not going to play? He had that one game suspension for team photographs or whatever happened. But consistency wise, what Leonard Fournette was able to do at the beginning of the season actually was very amazing. He was at the top of the list and floor for the longest time until he started playing again. And then his numbers kind of dropped a little bit. He finishes fourth on my list in core with a 17.7 average and a 6 standard deviation, which was the lowest among the top 10 in core, giving him a really high floor, high ceiling, a really nice coefficient of variation, and all of that gives him a really high core. So I think right now, I feel like Leonard Fournette's price has kind of dropped a little bit. People are worried that he's going to be banged up every single year. He's only going to play, you know, 12, 13 games a season because of that ankle injury. So I think now if you're looking for RB1 production, Leonard Fournette is the guy. And another one also.
One little note on Fournette. I'm sorry. No, I think he's a great one because if you just think about the Jags offseason, the quarterback position is either going to be the same or better. The offensive line will probably be better. And if you remember in week 17, Fournette started being a factor as a receiver. I think there might be better days ahead for him as a pass catcher.
Yeah, I think didn't Fournette finish with like 36 receptions or something like that? He averaged 3 or 4 per game. So we know that he's definitely capable of that. So it only helps elevate his floor in PPR formats and everything. So I'm really liking Leonard Fournette, you know, as a low-end RB1 price right now who could get you mid to high RB1 production next season. One more is Christian McCaffrey actually is my second buy from the running back position. I don't think people appreciated Christian McCaffrey's season and the production that he put up this year because he wasn't that effective on the running game, but his reception totals were off the charts. And that's really why he was really consistent all year with a 14 point average and a 5 standard deviation. The ceiling wasn't really there. He was kind of touchdown dependent to give you a really, really high week, but those reception totals are what made Christian McCaffrey. And if Jonathan Stewart isn't on the team next year, then I would assume that, you know, most of those running attempts are going to go to Christian McCaffrey. So if he's getting, you know, the majority of the looks in the passing game and the running game, Christian McCaffrey can only get better, in my opinion, next season and down the road. And they've shown that they're committed to him as well.
Yeah, I like the McCaffrey call a lot. And I agree with you that he was somewhat overlooked because he wasn't really used in as a runner or used in the running game. And I mean, when he was, he struggled. There's no sugarcoating that. But I think the best news coming from his rookie season is his use in the red zone, not only as a receiver, but as a runner as well. And even, you know, when you have Cam, who some people have called the best goal line back in the league, understandably so, and you have Jonathan Stewart, for McCaffrey to still get that red zone usage, I think is very encouraging. All right, let's finish up the running back section with some players you'd be selling, Addison.
So I got two big ones in it. They're big name running backs, especially, but their seasons were kind of up and down all year. So the first one I have here is Melvin Gordon. You know, he had that really explosive 2 weeks in a row of over 30 points and PPR formats with multiple touchdowns and per game and everything like that. And he does score well on core, but that's mainly due to a really, really high weekly ceiling. He was pretty inconsistent with almost a 9 standard deviation, which was one of the highest among running backs. And I'm just really concerned about, you know, his overall production being kind of touchdown dependent. And then we've seen what Austin Eckler was able to do at the end of the year. I'm not really sure that they're committed to him as their, you know, their bow cow running back now after the full season's worth of data. And while he did give you that production, it was kind of, you know, sporadic and you know, kind of almost unpredictable, especially once Austin Eckler got involved. So I think Melvin Gordon is a buy if people think that he is a, you know, a mid to high RB1. I look at him more as a high RB2 or a low RB1 with the production potential to get up to the, you know, a top 3 running back thanks to touchdowns mainly. And then the other one is actually Jordan Howard, who is kind of similar, but didn't really, you know, have consistently good games all season. He was more sporadic than Melvin Gordon. He his standard deviation was upwards near 9, just right behind Melvin Gordon. But his average was significantly lower with a 12 average compared to Gordon's 18. And he did have those really big weeks, but again, that was touchdown driven. And those are so unpredictable. And on a weekly basis, he didn't really perform, in the games that we thought he would perform. And he did perform in the games that we didn't think he would perform in. So me personally, I don't really like that kind of inconsistency on a weekly basis. So I think Jordan Howard is a big time buy if people view him as a mid RB1 as well. He might be a low end RB1 or high RB2. But if you can trade him for like a Leonard Fournette or somebody like that, I think you definitely have to do it just for the consistency's sake.
Yep. Matt, how are you valuing those two guys right now? Gordon and Howard.
Yeah, I think Gordon kind of is who he is at this point, and I do think he needs a sidecar back, you know, somebody else to take the load off, more receiver, the Woodhead version. I'm on board with you with him. Howard, my only exception to what you said was I got to think that the passing game's better next year in Chicago, that they go sign a big-time receiver and draft Ridley out of Alabama or something. You know, they have to be proactive to sometime establish some sort of running or passing game and make Howard's life easier. And maybe that leads to more consistency.
Right. So we'll see a coaching change in Chicago, of course. And you would think that would be good news for Howard. I mean, he had some games, especially down the stretch, where he just wasn't utilized at all. And maybe that's game flow. Maybe that's whatever the case might be, but it was certainly frustrating if you were relying on him towards the end of the season. But sometimes that those coaching changes don't work out like we think they will. So it's just that risk. I'm on board with selling Howard. At the same time, we've had these rookies come in. Everybody wants Kamara and Hunt and Fournette and McCaffrey and these guys. And Gordon and Howard, and I think Devontae Freeman might be in this mix as well. Those guys at this point are just kind of viewed as boring. People aren't excited to own them, even though they have produced. And it just makes me wonder, even though, especially with Gordon and Howard, those are not guys I would go out of my way to target. It makes me wonder if you could buy them at a discount because of that kind of that feeling of the dynasty community. That's maybe something to explore this offseason.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Ryan. And one more note on Howard, because there is a coaching change, I think he's a very good runner. And if by chance they mess with that and ask him to do more gap scheme stuff, power, maybe he won't be as effective. He's an interesting one. But before we go any further, I want to tell everyone about our sponsor, Harry's. We've told you about them before. I mentioned that I got hooked on Harry's razors a while back through another podcast. And I realized then how much you save on using this product as well. A lot of you out there have a New Year's resolution to save money this year, and you can save about $100 a year if you're an everyday shaver, even more, if you switch to Harry's razors as opposed to these store-bought ones you've been using. So, and the other thing that people are doing New Year's is to take better physical care of yourself, and Harry's products have won countless awards in the grooming community, and they'll keep you looking great and feeling great. So, kills two birds with one stone in the New Year's time of year here. What do you love most about Harry's? What do I love most about shaving with Harry's, though, is that it doesn't beat up my face. I mean, it's really smooth. I have real sensitive skin. I couldn't use a blade before. I was always an electric guy. Not anymore. So Harry's is all about a great shave at a fair price, which is why 3 million people, including myself, have switched. Jeff and Andy are just two ordinary dudes who are fed up with getting charged an arm and a leg for razor blades. They started Harry's to fix shaving. Harry's stripped out the unnecessary features like a vibrating handle and heating blades and 15 lubricating strips and all this crazy stuff, and the unnecessary costs to deliver customers one perfect razor at an amazing price. A good shave comes down to good blades. Because Harry's owns this factory in Germany, they're able to deliver amazing quality blades for just $2 a blade as opposed to $4 or more that you pay at the drugstore. And all these products are backed by 100% guarantee. So Harry's is so confident you're going to love their blades, they'll give you their trial shave set for free when you sign up at Harry's. You go to harrys.com/dynasty, and all you have to do is pay for shipping, which is pretty cool. Claim your free trial offer from Harry's today. It's a $13 value for free when you sign up. All you got to do is cover shipping. And your free trial set includes a weighted ergonomic razor handle, 5 precision blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, a travel blade cover. So go get your free trial set at harrys.com/dynasty right now. And that's harrys.com/dynasty.
Addison, let's finish up today with the wide receiver position. Looking over your data here, the player that stood out to me was Jarvis Landry, who finished second in, according to CORE, behind only DeAndre Hopkins. It just seems like this is a guy who continues to produce, but also continues to be underrated and undervalued by the dynasty community. Now he's entering free agency. And like we said earlier with the coaching change, sometimes when you have those changes, it works out. Sometimes it does not. So a little bit of risk just due to that free agency status with Landry. But beyond that, just based on the data that you found, how are you valuing him?
Yeah, so I've been one to always, you know, be a Landry apologist because he has been very productive, especially in PPR leagues, but he doesn't ever get the credit that really he deserves. And so this season really kind of, you know, everybody's eyes were like, you know, just popped open to Jarvis Landry, and all of a sudden he's scoring touchdowns. And that was the biggest difference this year from years past, and he still had the same reception numbers. The yardage wasn't really there, but he was nearly a 1,000-yard receiver. It was just the touchdowns. So because of how fluky touchdowns usually are, and also, you know, the risk of him being in free agency, I really want him to stay in Miami because I'm not sure that he's going to see the same volume anywhere else, you know, than what he does in Miami. There's still questions about whether or not Jay Cutler will be the quarterback next year. Ryan Tannehill returns if they draft someone else. So there's a lot of questions, you know, just around his situation. But in a vacuum, I think Jarvis Landry is the low-end wide receiver one. You know, he's not a top 10 wide receiver, but he's in that, you know, 11 to 15 range. But his price is never, you know, at that range at all. So he's always, you know, very underrated, like you said. So that's how I'm valuing him, especially in PPR leagues. I think he deserves to be up in the top 15 wide receivers that are talked about and drafted in startup drafts. So I don't know if that's how you guys view Landry, but that's personally, that's kind of how I had him coming into this year as well. But he did nothing but help to improve that his case for.
I have a new thought on him as you were talking, because you mentioned, boy, I really hope he stays in Miami. And I had thought the same thing, you know, that Gase knows how to use him well. He's been productive there. And then it kind of dawned on me is I wonder if Landry is quarterback proof, because he was productive before Gase. He went through what, 3 different quarterbacks this year. He's still going to catch a lot of balls. They're not hard throws. Even if he went to a team with a bad quarterback, maybe that would even help him. I wonder if he's quarterback proof and no matter where he goes, he's going to remain a high volume guy.
I think that's a good question. And I mean, when you look at the situation, they brought in Cutler after the Tannehill injury, and all that anybody wanted to talk about was how Cutler was going to favor Parker. And this was leading to a Devontae Parker breakout. And we know that didn't happen. Cutler missed some games and Matt Moore came in, and it never, you know, it never slowed Landry down at all. I do think we talked about the red zone usage with Christian McCaffrey. I think the red zone usage for Landry this season is a little bit fluky. I don't know if we can count on that to continue, whether he's in Miami or with another team. It was just such a major increase from his previous seasons that it stands out as an outlier and as something we don't want to bake into our ranking going forward. But overall, he's a player I continue to value higher and higher, the more I think about it and the more I look at my rankings and ADP and things like this. But yeah, I think maybe he is quarterback proof. And if he can do this in Miami with Ryan Tannehill and Jay Cutler and Matt Moore and some of the struggles that they've had, then I kind of feel like he could do it almost anywhere.
I don't know. I do agree with you. I do think that he's quarterback proof. I think he's a very underrated NFL receiver as well. But what my concern is that he's not going to get the volume. He's a very volume driven receiver, especially for fantasy production. So I tried to think of other teams that he could potentially go to in free agency, like Chicago, or maybe if Arizona is looking for a Larry Fitzgerald replacement, or, you know, Jacksonville with Allen Robinson if he leaves, or San Francisco, anywhere like that. And I'm just not sure if he's really going to see the volume that he does in Miami, because he kind of acts as an extension of the run game. And
the name I keep hearing, I've mentioned on here, is Baltimore.
Now, that would be interesting, but they target the running back so much that it's just, he's always been an extension of the run game. And I was worried about him coming into this year because of his production when Jay Ajayi really took off in 2016. He fell out of the top 24 wide receivers over that time span. And so I had a lot of concerns about his volume when with Ajayi, and then Ajayi was moved. And, you know, Landry wasn't really affected by Ajayi before he was traded. And then he took off even more after Ajayi was traded, and they were kind of switching between Drake and Damian Williams. So I just have questions about his volume, you know, if he goes to a team with a more established running back.
Yeah, that's certainly a fair concern. And if you factor that in with the, like I mentioned, the expected drop, or at least potential drop in red zone usage, then I can see having a little bit of concern, but I still think he's undervalued. Let's talk about some of these players that have gotten a little bit of a reputation as deep threats or big play receivers. And it's no surprise that most of these guys scored pretty low on your, according to your data. Kenny Golladay, Tyler Lockett, Sammy Watkins, DeSean Jackson. Those are just a few of them, but there's several others that are kind of viewed as boom bust players. Like I said, no surprise that they're viewed as inconsistent from week to week, but have you found that going through this process, collecting this data and analyzing it each week, do you feel like that's kind of swaying you away from players like that?
Yeah, definitely. Even before I started, you know, actually calculating and analyzing these numbers, I always really try to stay away from players like Lockett or Sammy Watkins or DeSean Jackson, just because they're never consistent enough for you to really know when their good game is going to be, and they're really a headache to start, especially if one of them has like a Monday night game and you need like 7 points and you're not sure if he's going to hit that seven. For me, I've always stayed away from players like that. And I will continue to, because of this data and everything like that. They're all near the bottom of the list in core just because of how up and down they are. Personally, I think Golladay is somewhat of an exception because I think he does have the potential to be more consistent down the road. Kind of like in Amari Cooper fashion. It depends on, you know, a lot of situation there in Detroit, but other players, like, especially I personally think Tyler Lockett is droppable in dynasty leagues. I don't really think he has the production to be, you know, on every single roster in every single league, but other people like Watkins and DeSean Jackson, they're just such a headache to start that I don't really want, you know, that headache over the course of a season.
Yeah, that's fair. Watkins didn't really become that type of player until this season. He, of course, in Buffalo, he made those big plays, but he also had the volume to go with it. And things kind of changed this year. So he might be a player to try to get rid of based on that name value. Let's go the other way, though. Who are some players based on your data that you would be buying in dynasty leagues this offseason at the wide receiver position?
Yeah, so I have three big ones that I think jump out to me. The first one is Davante Adams. He just signed that contract extension. Everybody's talking about him being the new wide receiver one in Green Bay. And a lot of people coming into this year believe that he, you know, was driven a lot on touchdowns, myself included. He had, 12 in 2016? But if you're looking at his numbers, you know, he finished fifth in core and had a very consistent season with and without Aaron Rodgers. I think Adams, personally, I think Adams is a very nice buy low. If people still worried about Rodgers' return and Jordy Nelson staying, I think his future is safe. I think his situation is very safe. If you're catching passes from Aaron Rodgers, obviously you're going to have good fantasy production. So I think he's a buy. Similar to that, Michael Thomas, the first receiver ever under Drew Brees to have 100 receptions. And I know I said that Drew Brees is a sell just because of, you know, his age, and they're not really committed to the passing game as much as they were before. But Michael Thomas has shown that he's still capable of doing that, almost more of like a better Jarvis Landry, in the sense that he has that reception floor on a weekly basis, and then the touchdowns are what's kind of fluky for his production. But I think Michael Thomas was really underrated coming into this year. And with Drew Brees, I think he's one of the safest players that, you know, will finish in the top 12, especially at receivers. I think he's one of the safest receivers to finish as a top 12 receiver with Drew Brees. And then the last one for me is actually Alshon Jeffrey. He's not that wide receiver one that everybody thought he was in Chicago. And he's kind of taken, you know, a more decreased role, but on a better offense with a better quarterback, and has really kind of became a very safe and solid wide receiver too in fantasy. He may not be the number one target on his team every single game, every single drive, because of Zach Ertz, and maybe Nelson Aguilar kind of takes a little bit more of a step next year. But I think Jeffrey is very, very safe. He was very consistent this year with a 6 standard deviation, which was very low for wide receivers. And he finished very high in the core rankings. He was in the top 15 as well. So I'm really liking Alshon Jeffrey. He just signed that contract extension as well. So his situation is very, very safe down the road in Dynasty.
I have one Adams thought that I don't think changes his value at all, but I just wanted to get it. I just wanted to be one of the first people to predict this. If I'm the Packers, new GM, Nelson is old and maybe done and expensive. Your boy Randall Cobb, Ryan, he's really expensive for what you're getting out of him.
Yes, yeah, he is.
And we'll just leave it at that. If I was in charge of the Packers, I would call Mr. Ty Montgomery and said, go back to the wide receiver meeting room. Williams and Jones are our running back. Montgomery's our number two. Adams is our number one. And we draft somebody else too. I mean, I think your wide receiver problem's in-house.
They've got to do something at wide receiver, because they're almost certainly going to get rid of one of either Jordy or Cobb. Both of those contracts are looking bad right now. I don't think they would cut them both, although financially they might like to. Maybe they give them both the same deal, and, you know, the first one to restructure gets to stay and the other one goes. I don't know how those things work. Matt, you know more about that front office type of dealings, but one of them is going to be gone, and whether it's moving Montgomery back or if they draft or they're rarely active in free agency, but
new GM though.
Yeah. With this free agent market, it's going to be hard not to be active, and they're going to be plenty of options. So yeah, they're going to be making some moves. I love the Adams call, love the Thomas call. Both of those are, I feel like, pretty hot names in Dynasty circles right now. I guess the only thing I would disagree with is I don't see Adams as a buy low. It seems like his value, even with Rodgers being out for much of the season and the concussions that we've seen with Adams this season, his value just continues to rise. So I don't think either of those guys are coming cheap. The Alshon call kind of intrigues me. I want to look at that a little bit more. I like that one. Addison, let's finish up today with a couple of players that you would be selling in Dynasty.
Yeah, so I have another three here, and a couple of them might be, you know, a little hot takey, but certainly, you know, merited. The first one I think is Dez Bryant. He really hasn't had that production that everybody, you know, just attaches to that name, especially not just this year, but the past few years. Dez really hasn't been what everybody thought he would be for fantasy. And, you know, this season in particular, he scored, you know, somewhat high on the core rankings, but that was due to him being very, very consistent. He had under a 5 standard deviation, which was very high. but he was around an 11 points per game average, which really dropped his ceiling, significantly, only a 16.57 ceiling. And so if you're paying, close to wide receiver one price for Dez Bryant, I that's a giant mistake. And if you can sell on that, I think you just have a steal of a trade right there. If you can sell him for close to wide receiver one price and everything like that, like if you can sell Dez even for Alshon, I think that's the perfect move that I think a lot of people should make. And so Dez Bryant is the first one. The other one we mentioned already was Sammy Watkins, how he became kind of that boom bust, touchdown, big play guy in LA. And, the rumor is now that he wants to stay in Los Angeles, which I don't blame him. I would stay in LA too. But if he's going to stay in LA with already the rapport that Goff has with Kupp and with Robert Woods, and then he loves checking down to Todd Gurley, I'm just not certain that we'll ever see, that Sammy Watkins that we thought we would see in Buffalo if he would have stayed healthy, or that we thought we would have seen in LA this past year. So I'm just really concerned about his future if he does stay in LA. Of course, if he were to sign elsewhere, then that would change some things. But if he stays in LA, I think he's a sell. And then the last one is Stephon Diggs, who, was that hot name at the beginning of the year. But he was very, very inconsistent. And he had over a 9 standard deviation, which was very, very high for a wide receiver. And even though his ceiling was pretty high, upwards of 23, his floor was down below a 5 points per game as a floor. So he's middle of the pack in core, but I just don't really see how he's, going to be a consistent wide receiver one producer for you if you're going to be paying wide receiver one numbers for Stephon Diggs, even high wide receiver two numbers. I think he should be along the lines more valued, a little bit less than Jarvis Landry, because he can score you the touchdowns and he is a PPR machine, but he's very inconsistent with all the other weapons that Minnesota has, and Adam Thielen, Kyle Rudolph, Dalvin Cook coming back. So I think Stephon Diggs, if you can sell high on him, I think it's worth it to do that.
Diggs is probably my favorite call of those. It seems like a lot of people are giving up on Dez, so his value is fading fast. That may actually make him a player to buy low at some point this offseason. I don't think people know what to do with Sammy Watkins, honestly, and I include myself in that. he's a player that I've been a fan of and have believed in. I have him on a bunch of my rosters, and we've already talked about his inconsistent production this season. I don't know what to do. If I can get anything close to probably top three round startup value, I'm doing that. So if I could flip him for a guy like Landry, that's the name we keep talking about, that I think I would have to do that. And Diggs is the one that he did almost nothing after week four or so. And people still love that guy. Now, if that happens at the end of the season, maybe it's a different story and it changes our outlook on him. But to have so many games through most of the season of either being banged up or playing and simply being overshadowed by Adam Thielen, it's kind of frustrating. But people still love him. So I'm totally on board with the sell high on Diggs.
The injuries and the wear and tear kind of worry me with him.
Great stuff, Addison. Really informative, and I love looking at your data here that you've produced, and I think you actually have your tight end article coming out soon. Is that correct?
Yep, that will drop Friday morning.
All right, so you can check out the quarterback, running back, and wide receiver versions, and look for the tight end article soon. And Addison, go ahead and tell our listeners where they can find your work.
Yeah, so all my work you can find at RotoBaller, and you can find me on Twitter at AmazeHayes_Roto as well.
Thanks again for coming on. We'll be back next week with more Dynasty Blueprint.